Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Magazine Rack, where we talk game news and things we're playing. Speaking of what we're playing, let me tell you what I've been playing. That nice. New Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity came out for Switch.
You're only a little excited, right?
Yeah.
I am only a little bit excited, if you can't tell.
Because you've been talking about this for weeks.
Only a little excited.
You liked it so much, and you're so excited that you jumped over our introducing ourselves.
Okay, we can do this again.
No, we're fine.
No, it's fine. I actually really like this.
Hi, Bill.
I'm sorry,
guys. This is it for me. This is top tier Warriors game. There's nothing better. It's. I'm a Warriors fan since 2. I think I mentioned it in another episode, but like, I'm Jack, and I'm a big fan of the Warriors game.
Hi, Jack.
No, it's so wonderful, and I don't see how they can make this any more appealing to other people who don't play Warriors games, because there's just so much you can do. It's no longer just mash, mash, mash. There's so many options they throw at you that you can do. And there's lots of fun, unique move sets and characters. Music's amazing. And it's Zelda. So like it appeals to all these different things. And I just don't see if you're not going to like a Warriors game after this, you won't ever like a Warriors game. It's good. It's so good.
My question for you is, because I've played the demo, right? Mm-hmm. How much does the game grow, right? Like, if I didn't love the demo, mm-hmm. how much time should I give it to give it a proper, like, chance after that, right?
I would definitely say give it till after you get the champions, which is the next spot after the demo.
So it's like the next chapter kind of thing?
Yeah, the next chapter. Because at that point, I think you're getting about half the cast. I haven't finished it yet, but you get the champions, and then I've gotten two side characters that you can get, which are really goofy, but they're great.
And, love it. Is it Tingle? Please let me be Tingle.
It's not. All the characters are Breath of the Wild characters, and Tingle is unfortunately not.
Make Tingle canon in Breath of the Wild.
Apparently, Tingle is not liked in America, which is why they don't bring Tingle's games over here. Yeah. He's got two games in Japan.
I know.
Yeah,
Tingle's Magical Rupee Land or whatever, and the other one, I don't remember.
He's hugely popular over there for some reason.
I'm cool with Tingle.
Yeah, I like Tingle. He's great. but yeah, it's a great game, and if I think once you get the champions, that's a good
a good judging point
because you got access to more characters, especially since Zelda's moveset wasn't very fun, because
it was pretty boring.
It's very boring, and that's on purpose, because the whole thing with Zelda and Breath of the Wild in the flashbacks was that she hasn't unlocked her powers. And so she's constantly struggling with depression because she can't unlock her powers. But everyone else is doing so good, living up to their potential, but she can't. And that's throughout the story in this one, is that she's struggling with herself and just frustration that she can't.
They flesh out those flashbacks kind of thing a little bit more.
And so lore-wise, your character, Zelda, doesn't grow. Like, her moveset doesn't grow for a while. I've only just gotten, I think, her last move for this thing, because she's going to get a new move. It's in the trailer. She's going to get a new move set where she has light arrows and stuff.
Oh, no.
I haven't gotten there yet. Her power will be unlocked, of course. But even like her beginning move set doesn't grow for a while. Like, the game only gives everybody their move sets after a couple levels. You don't get it all at once. Because everyone is growing.
I remember that you're unlocking things, like one or two moves from the map mechanic.
Right. And I think that's really neat. Instead of just having it just as a mechanic, it's actually part of the game's lore and just them growing as characters.
That's cool. I mean, that was my problem with the original Breath of the Wild, was just how, like, it's a great adventure, but it's not like deep storytelling by any means, obviously. I mean, most of the games aren't, let's face it. But the little tidbits that we got were really interesting. And I'm like, I want to know more. Like, I spent many hours going trying to find all those memories.
Yeah.
I want more, you know? And I felt very I don't know, undergiven.
Yeah, the lore in Zelda games is great. It's just how it's like given
presented.
Yeah, and, like, I'll give them credit. You know, it's not just exposition, which I'm incredibly happy with. That's a big reason why I like Zelda games, is it's not like,
yeah,
you know, they don't obnoxiously tell you the story as it goes on. It's a lot of visual storytelling.
Yeah, but, it's like, good.
Yeah, but the one thing I have heard about the Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity, I think that's what it's called, is I don't have that much interest in it, but you can play as Urbosa, so that means that it's getting my game of the year.
that's the thing.
And I assume
Pura, I was very excited to play
is
her.
Playable. I've heard Pura is playable. Pura too.
Is not playable. She,
no, okay. Game, not game of the year. Lost.
She's goodbye. Probably going to be DLC because her and Robbie both have an art thing. Like, I can't remember what those are called.
Like, was character it like portrait? Data mined or something?
Yeah, a portrait. Yeah. They have an art portrait. And so they're probably going to be DLC later. Mm. But they're not really... They're in the story, but only in like cutting scenes for like a second. Like, Pura's like, I figure something out with the Sheikah Slate, or I figure something out with the towers. Like, she's not involved in the battles at all. Mm. Same with Robbie. They're just scientists, but I'm sure they're going to become later. Like, Robbie will probably make that robot his weapon.
Yeah.
Pura will probably have something with the Sheikah Slate or her camera.
Yeah.
Have like a move set like that.
Yeah, I'm super excited for that. But I don't know. I really like the space of Breath of the Wild. I really like the world. It was a lot of fun. Because that was a game where, like, they really don't tell you much story outside of, like, flashbacks, no, basically.
I love that they're just like, hey, go play.
Yeah.
And exactly. You're like, whoa, you know? Yeah. Obviously, you're barred out of a couple spots, but, like, as a majority sake, it just go.
Yeah.
And you're like...
That's what I really liked about it, is you got to kind of create your own story with it. It's a very good water cooler game of just, like... You know, telling a coworker like, "Oh, I ran into this weird Korok," and they're like, "Oh, that's how you do that? I ran across those rocks and I didn't know what to do." Blah blah blah.
Yeah,
like it's.
I remember that. That was a good time.
Yeah, and even now, like I don't play it as often as I should, but sometimes I just go back to Breath of the Wild and mess around for a little bit. It's just like, oh, I found another Korok. I found another trial I didn't do. Like, nice. It's definitely one of those games, and I always really enjoyed it because of that. Not so the biggest Zelda fan, but.
You're slowly working up so you can get the piece of poo.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why you keep going back. You really want that poo.
If I remember correctly, a mutual friend of ours, Kim, actually got it. She got poured the poo? Over the game for like... She like brought up a guide on how to find every single one. And was like doing it for like 3 weeks or something. And I was like, geez. But she got it.
Great. She got the poo. There should be a thing in Age of Calamity or another one where, like, if your game data has the piece of poo, you get something, like, in the sequel or this one.
So you
like,
collect poo. That would be dope.
You collect poo? What?
You do collect poo in this one.
Oh, you collect poo. Nice.
You're running to the Koroks?
Yeah, they're hidden away in the levels, and you can find them, and then you get poo, and then you use them to expand your inventory slot. I don't know what happens if you get them all. Maybe you'll get a big poo. I don't know.
There's no way that the description's not going to have the word poo in it now, just so you know. We talk about Breath of the Wild and
I do like the story though. It's I already hate the beginning, but I very dislike the direction they took with it, because it's time travel. They're explaining everything to time travel, so I already know what's going to happen in the end.
Yeah,
because Nintendo's not going to let all their characters die at the end of the game. There's no way. They're going to do an end game and change time, probably do a different timeline. But the story is interesting, which is good, because I didn't find the story in Breath of the Wild interesting at all, because there wasn't a lot of screen time for everybody, and it was just, there wasn't a lot of character development, especially since the characters were dead.
Like, yeah, that's fair. Well, you can't be too attached to them because they're not there, right?
Yeah. Also,
go ahead. I said I always viewed them as kind of like links to the current new champions, you know? So it's like, it's interesting knowledge because it's like, well, you kind of see where the connections lie and stuff.
Mm-hmm. I see that. Yeah. And that's good. But it's really cool to see them getting more fleshed out in this one.
That's cool.
And then playing as them is so much fun. Mm. Fun fact. Did you know that Link talks in Breath of the Wild? He didn't
that's
have
not
a
right.
dialogue.
That's yet. Not right.
In Zelda's diary,
yeah,
she talks to him and he responds and she says what he said.
Yeah, she talks about how he's like largely mute but can talk.
Well, she says Link opened up to her. It turns out he's quite a glutton. He can't resist a delicious meal. Yeah. When I finally got around to asking why he's so quiet all the time, it was difficult for him to say, but he did. He said, with so much at stake and so many eyes upon him, he feels it's necessary to stay strong and to silently bear any burden.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. That was really cool. And that was actually turning point for Zelda's character when she's like, oh, you know what? He has his problems just like I have mine. And I shouldn't be like thinking about myself all the time. I should start focusing on others. And I think that was a really neat way to make that into
character like why it's that way. Yeah.
Like, that's neat.
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a lot. I was super excited when I found that in Breath of the Wild. I hunted that down. And, you know, it's just nice to have those like kind of subtle little lore drops that you have to kind of look for.
Yeah, that's cool.
Also, like for the one thing Link to ever say in all his games, I thought that was a really great line. I was like, that really fits him a lot. That's cool.
It's a good statement. Yeah. That needs to be on trivia. It's like, has Link talked?
Yeah, kind of. Aside from those CDI games.
Right.
By the way, welcome to our Breath of the Wild review.
Right. Speaking of which, we should probably move on. Ty, what have you been playing?
I've been playing Crash 4, which we talked about a lot in a different episode, so I'm just going to say like I've been really enjoying it. And then I've been focusing on mobile gaming recently. I've re-picked up Final Fantasy War of the Visions.
Oh, and
which one is that?
I played that heavily when that first came out.
Yeah, it's a tactics-like game. It has a lot of gacha elements and stuff like that, which is kind of annoying for me.
I love art.
Oh, the art in it's amazing. But the reason I came back is my fiance has been playing it. And then on top of that, they just started a collaborative campaign with Final Fantasy IV. So,
oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so by logging in, you get Cecil. And then I think next week they're going to put Kane and Rosa in the game.
Yeah.
And as you know, I'm a huge Final Fantasy IV fan. So I was
jam.
Oh, yeah, I love it.
Me and Avery, we had like... It was a pretty decent guild for a long time because we played it for the first several months that it was out. Super fun. I mean, like, it was super fun for a long time. I just moved on to Tales where I'm like, cool, this is my jam.
Because my big issue with the game is that you have to put in so much work to max out a character.
It's terrible. It is terrible for that.
Yeah, like, that's the issue that I have with a lot of gacha games recently is it's like you need the character who's already, like, a 1 in 1 million chance of pulling.
You need to pull them like five times. And then on top of it, you need to pull another five of them for another thing to make them the best they could possibly be.
Yeah.
And once this limited time event's gone, you can't get them again.
Exactly. So, like they're being very...
We need to do our mobile game episode.
Yeah, we do. They're being very charitable with shards for him to like max him out.
Yeah, some of them are cool.
I got a lot of Viseray by like... I have like that welcome back bonus.
Is that how it sounds? I thought it was Azor.
Vizor is probably how it's pronounced.
I don't actually know.
And I'm having fun, like, you know, getting Cecil maxed out. But at the same time, it's like, okay, you need a character. You need X amount of shards to max out the character. You need the supplies to max out the level of the character. And then on top of that, you need good vision cards for the character. And then on top of that, you need to make the best equipment for the character. And this is an issue I have with like a lot of mobile games now.
And some of that equipment you can't get unless you fully awaken those characters.
Exactly. Like another game that's like this is Dragalia. Like I really like Dragalia, and they just recently made their equipment system a lot easier to do.
I played that at launch and I haven't played it since, basically.
But with that, you have to pull the character. And then on top of that, you have to max out their spirals. And then on top of that, you need their best equipment. And then you also need the worm prince, as well as the best dragon.
It super sucks as a like common consumer.
Yeah.
However, for these companies that make them, they need to make their returns. So the only way they could do that is get people to spend money. You have your whales, you have your other people.
Yeah.
So, like, it's super necessary for the like game economy for it.
Yeah, 100%. But
it still feels bad when you're playing a free game and it having those issues.
Yeah, like the thing is they're trying to appeal to whales, and I 100% understand that because that's where they're making most of their money. I just hate it when I start a game and it's like, hey, here's five things you have to max out. It's like, okay,
that game was very heavily you need to reroll for like either three of these alternate units or this one like broken unit, basically. Yeah. Medeina or whatever her name was. That character is like OP. She's like, yo, let me just nuke your dude, the dudes. And it's stupid. At least at launch. Like there was no other unit that really came close. Mm-hmm. I had a team of like the three other ones and I eventually got that unit. But yeah, it was a lot.
Yeah. But I just feel so spoiled by it. We'll talk about this more in the mobile game episode, but I feel super spoiled by Opera Omnia. Because I started when it started, I've been following it the entire time. So it's ramped up into all the ridiculousness, but I have, because I've been playing since the beginning, I have all these resources just saved up. And it's like, oh cool, this new feature dropped. I guess I'm just gonna like buy it casually, free to play though.
Well, like it's all equipment and stuff, so it's not like characters locked behind. And that's the ultimate feel bad. Usually, it's like, hey, I've been saving up for this character that I really want because it's my favorite.
Yeah.
And you spend all of your resources and you don't get it, and you're like, oh shit, that feels bad.
That's been Halloween Noe in Fire Emblem for me for ages.
Gotcha.
But what have you been playing? We should probably get into the actual episode.
Well, we're not there yet, but yeah, I agree. I've been playing a bunch of stuff from my PS5 because I just dropped, which upcoming we have a PS5 featured episode. We're super excited for that. But I've been playing Miles Morales and I've been playing Assassin's Creed Valhalla. Miles has been amazing. I love it. Again, I'll talk more about it later. And AC Valhalla, which I haven't played an Assassin's Creed game since the first one. Mm-hmm. The very first one. I've seen like Jack play it a couple times, like some of the later ones.
They're vastly different now.
Yeah, clearly. But I've been very much enjoying my time in Valhalla. Like it's so much fun. Like it's written like it's a TV show or something to a certain extent. Cause it's like it's kind of like these segmented parts of the story.
Yeah.
And you go and it's like, I feel like this is almost like a continuation of like Vikings or something. Like it's pretty neat. I'm very much enjoying it. I'm almost done with it too, so you know.
I'm excited to start that.
Yeah. My character is awesome. Like I love there's so many options of like what you can be using as weapons and stuff like that. I went into the like super aggro route. So my Viking is just like brutal. There's a perk you can unlock that lets you use two double heavy weapons.
Oh my word.
So there's I'm using two double like great axes basically. And there's a thing where I run in. So many dudes just get like one-hitted by me. So but you come in, you swing downward, right? And then it goes into like this like animated thing for a second, like depending on if you do like I think it's a crit that triggers it, where you like come in, swing down on them, you swing the axes around, chop off their legs, the character spins in place with blood splurting out of their legs. The legs are like flying off to the side while they come down.
Oh, it's
ridiculous. There's a couple like super crazy scenes. Like the finishers are brutal. Very much feels like I am like this primal person just chopping legs off. And you go over into like the story scene and you're like, I'm for democracy, you know? And you're like... it's very weird. I'm very much enjoying the game. I actually went out and bought Assassin's Creed Odyssey just because I love like Greek and Roman mythology stuff, but just on the basis of how good Valhalla was. And I know that that's when they started, or Origins was when they were adding in the RPG mechanics. So
yeah.
And as we know, I'm an RPG dude. So yeah, that's about it for me. It's mostly that. I want to pick up Star Renegades at some point because that looks really good. It's like a space tactical RPG. And yeah, that's the big stuff.
All we gotta do is wait until December 10th for a little over 2 weeks
for Cyberpunk. Yeah. Oh yeah, Jack. And related to Assassin's Creed. Yellowbrick, tell us about that for our first print of the news story.
For those who haven't learned about this, Mike Laidlaw, who's the former creative director for the Dragon Age games at BioWare, he's been working for BioWare for 14 years. He's with a couple other people from
Ubisoft. He's one of the granddaddies of BioWare at this point.
Yeah. I think he started with Jade Empires, it looks like.
Oh, that game's solid.
Yeah.
I need to go back and like finish that. I wish that got
remade as well.
There's so many games that need remastered from that. Give me a KOTOR one and I will I will buy the Ultimate Collector's Edition. I don't care how much it costs. Yeah.
He wasn't in that, but he did start in Jade Empires, but then he's done all the other Dragon Age games and Mass Effect 1. He was additional designer on that. But he's starting a new company called Yellow Brick Games, and he's going to be the chief creative officer. I'm super excited about this because, like you said, these are the granddaddies of some of the best RPGs out there and Western RPGs. And he, you know, maybe we'll have some of that BioWare magic in the, coming from this studio.
That'd be nice. I would like to get something with the BioWare magic. I remember.
Yeah. I mean, hell, even if they just make a, like, you know, original game or even like something kind of derivative of Mass Effect or, Dragon Age, like to kind of have like one of those
the spiritual successor type thing.
Yeah. To have a more like down to earth fantasy.
Yeah,
that'd be cool.
I think there's a lot of platforms they can go with, like in terms of like themes and stuff.
Yeah.
And them kind of going off their own. Like, I feel like we're gonna see a new IP, like something completely new, not like tied to previous IP to something else.
Yeah.
Because they're doing their own thing. Like, I feel like that's the reason why you would leave. Companies like that, leave Ubisoft, leave BioWare, leave whatever else, because you want to form something that's like new and fresh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And not controlled, because like BioWare is controlled by EA. Ubisoft has, like, if you're working on Assassin's Creed or whatever, you have Ubisoft, you have, which is part of Activision and stuff. So I think that's a good sign for things to come. I'm very much an advocate for like indie devs and stuff like that. Maybe like a AAA indie, you know? But they're still independent to their own devices. Because I'm a big fan of that in like comic books. Like, I don't read the big two anymore. I read Image, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's independent, it's creator-owned IPs. That's what I believe in. Is if you are the one dictating your story, your game is going to be better for it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, that's been like my real love affair with like indie games lately. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, I love like Final Fantasy and stuff, but like.
Well, think of the games that do it better.
Yeah.
Like you have Stardew Valley. I feel like I've talked about this before. It's like Stardew Valley literally does Harvest Moon better than Harvest Moon.
Yeah.
There's tons of titles to look at for this too. And that's why we get spiritual successor type games or things like that. Look at Yooka-Laylee, because they're able to do what they want to, you know, they want to do on their own, but they can't do it with Banjo anymore. So they've moved on, you know, they have a new thing. So like there's a lot of development like forward while giving somebody something familiar.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they're really able to like kind of tread this ground that hasn't really been, you know, treaded in a while. It was something that used to be these like staples that we kind of forgot about. And this is something like I've always talked about how I wanted to do a spiritual successor to like Tactics Advanced. But like the tactics genre is really kind of coming back now.
Yeah. Like I mentioned earlier, the Star Renegades that came out a while back. On PC, supposedly it's had great reviews. It just came out to Switch and Xbox.
Yeah.
Very excited for it because it's a like Star Wars-y, spacey tactical RPG, and like there's been a bunch of stuff like that. Wargroove. We've seen how Fire Emblem has been doing now that with Three Houses and everything. Tactics games are coming back, and that's awesome.
Yeah.
Another thing about Yellow Brick is they're currently hiring, and I was like that could be really cool, and I went to their hiring page and I was like, let's see what positions they have open, and they're like, are you a senior member of the game design community? I'm like, nope. And they're like, email us. I'm like, email us, find out what we're missing. And I'm like, oh no.
Oh man.
Hey, do you need a QA guy with like 2 years of experience
with slot machines?
There you go.
Do you guys really like the Jackbox game?
Oh man. Oh buddy.
But, good for them. I'm always happy to hear of like, you know, studios popping up and new projects.
Oh yeah.
Same here. I think that's what pushes industries forward.
No, so. Really. Even if it just gives us a couple of really good indie games, like
I'm cool with that.
Hell yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Ty, what were you going to talk about?
I was going to talk about talking about indie games. There we go. That's a transition.
Right.
Undertale Live performed on Twitch a couple days ago. I wanted to talk about it because I went to the original Undertale Live in Chicago back in January. I bought a hoodie there and I
was it this year
every single day. Yeah. Yeah, that was January of this year.
That feels like 3 years ago at this
point. Oh, it feels like a decade ago. I feel like I've lost my innocence since.
I remember talking to one of my coworkers at the shop about it, and like, because he was going, I'm like, how that feels so long ago.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Oh, yeah. Like, and a cool thing is, like, after the concert, when I went to it, they plugged their Discord and they announced, like, hey, we're going into the studio. We're going to start working on an album, a covers album. And I was like super excited for it. And then I checked on in on the Discord server like once a week, like to see like, oh, any news about like, you know, the album or anything, and nothing.
Oh, man.
Like, never. And I was just like, oh, come on. And then out of nowhere, Toby Fox tweeted out that Undertale Live was going to do a Twitch performance because we're in quarantine, obviously. And I was like, oh, cool. I'm excited for that. I ended up missing it, sadly. I caught the tail end of it, but the reason they did the concert is because they just released live album.
Hmm.
And it's amazing. It's like $15 on Bandcamp. And it's,
oh, that's it? That's pretty solid.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's the better part of the original score. It has a couple Deltarune songs in there, which I was super happy with. That's they cool. have Mad Mew Mew, which was a Switch release exclusive song.
Interesting.
Yeah,
they have those exclusive songs to the platforms.
Yeah, Switch. I believe it was just the Switch. Yeah, the Switch added a boss fight.
Oh, that's interesting.
That it's Ooh. Really goofy, and I love it to death. And I was God, I've played through Undertale at least 10 times now.
Oh wow, like, it's getting super good.
Yeah, I did a to find because the thing is, I wanted to see all the Easter eggs, so I did a no save run of the game.
Nice.
And my favorite thing, I'm going to avoid spoilers because I always want people to see the game. But like, if you beat the entire game without saving, a couple characters kind of comment on it.
Oh, that's cool.
They're just like, where they're like, oh, well, like there's a character who like he kind of knows like you're playing a game, and he says something like, oh, well, you haven't died under my watch, like. Yep. And if you've died multiple times, he's just like, why are you looking at me like that?
Huh?
And it skips that line of dialogue if you haven't died or if you haven't saved or died.
That game was so clever, like in so many different ways.
Oh, insanely.
In a storytelling aspect, in game design aspect, in so many different levels that game is just done so well.
Yeah, and my favorite Easter egg that I found out that I haven't really seen it posted anywhere. I'm 99% sure other people have found this out. But if you beat the whole game without, if you beat the game pacifist route without saving, and you get all the way to the end and you do everything once again without dying, at the beginning of the game, a character who talks to you at the end of the game who says like, hey, you have to do this extra little thing to get like the really, really good ending. You start back at the beginning of the game, which you weren't supposed to do in the normal run.
Sure.
And instead of giving you his like little speech and stuff, he just goes, don't mess it up this time. And that's it. So God, I still need to play through it. But you said like it is a very clever game. Like Toby Fox, like he thought of everything in it, which is what really like it's the reason it's like my game of the decade.
I just love the story of like he was a like ROM hacker for like, you know, Earthbound and stuff. And like he made this game and just people fell in love with it. Like that is like the indie dream, you know? Like now there's orchestras playing the music, there's all this other stuff. There's people doing covers and all this other crazy stuff. Like that is so cool, you know?
Yeah. Because even before the more recent because I believe it's called the Fifth Orchestra, is the people who did the Chicago show and the most recent show.
Okay.
A couple months ago, a Japanese orchestra did like the entire score of the game. And it was like kind of this big event. They streamed it on YouTube. And something that sticks out to me, I want to find it, is a tweet that Toby Fox tweeted out that was just so funny. Oh yeah, they did it for the 5th anniversary. Where is it? Because it's just so...
Has it been five years?
Oh yeah, it's been five years.
5 years since it came out?
Feels like not that long ago.
Oh, okay, I found the tweet. It's me. I have to make a song for my game, and I have to make it in 20 minutes using free samples I downloaded online. Orchestra arranges and does an amazing performance of it in front of 50,000 people. Oh.
That's awesome.
Yeah, like all the live performances for the Undertale soundtrack are great. Like, and Toby Fox, before he did like all of the stuff, obviously he did Earthbound ROM hacks and stuff, but yeah. He also did the score for Homestuck, and he lived in the guy who does Homestuck. I always forget his name. I want to say it's Andrew House, but I think that's wrong. Toby Fox lived in his basement for like 2 years.
No way.
And he did music for Homestuck because of that. And there was even a joke that it was...
That's another like super faithful fan base.
Yeah. What's that? Creator of Homestuck. Andrew Hussey. That's his name. Andrew Hussey made a joke that he thought it was called Undertale because it was being done in his basement.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, like... another great aspect of Undertale outside of gameplay and story is that the soundtrack is like amazing, and Toby Fox did like all of it. And yeah. There's a lot of like these really funny Easter eggs in the music. There's themes that call back to other characters. There's themes that call back to different like levels.
It's so well done.
Like one of my favorite is there's a song in it that wasn't used in the final game, and it's called the song that plays when you fight Sans. Which got replaced with Megalovania, obviously.
Yeah. My favorite spoiler. Is Dog Song. Dog Song is the best song.
Oh yeah, yeah. But that's not even a spoiler. Everybody knows Megalovania now.
Yeah.
But
that's the song.
But in the song that might play when you fight Sans, I was listening to it again recently. There's references to Papyrus's theme, and there's a slight reference to Toriel's theme, and then in the most recent. Or in the Japanese live concert for the 5th anniversary, they play tidbits of Heartbreak and Bone Trussell in Megalovania. Like, there's a lot of this, like, really good intricacy between the themes.
I love that. When, like, final boss music or things like that is, like, a callback that makes you think of the entire game. Yeah. Like, I think I mentioned it in our Tales of Abyss episode, but, like, that final song that plays when you fight the boss there, the final boss... Like, the first time I faced that, I'm like, holy crap, this is just, like, an encompassment of the entire game to me, you know?
Yeah.
And it's so powerful. And, like, so I love when they do stuff like that. It's such a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. What was I going to say about it? Yeah, like, that's the reason why I like Undertale so much. And, like, I think eventually we're going to do, I want to eventually do an episode about it, but, like, the thing is, it's just like perfect in every single way. The music, amazing. Like the gameplay, amazing. The story is amazing. Like there's nothing about it that like falls short, which is
right.
And of course, like just the music, like just listening to the soundtrack on my phone now, like I still tear up at certain parts. I'm like, oh God, Toby, how could you do this to me?
Oh man, nice. Is that it for you?
Yeah, that's all I got for Undertale Live. Go buy it. Or the soundtrack on Bandcamp. It's amazing.
Did they do any physical releases for it?
They're doing a physical CD release. I'm waiting to see if they do a vinyl before I get a physical. I hope they do a vinyl. But
if I say anything, I'll let you know.
Oh, yeah. But right now, it's just a CD press.
Cool. Any physical something.
Yeah.
So it's funny because a lot of people have been getting into like cassettes and stuff recently. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the next one is for me. So Persona 5, as we know, I love. But there's a game out in Japan called Persona 5 the Phantom Striker, or sorry, Persona 5 Scramble. In the US, the localized name is the Phantom Strikers. And it's basically like a Dynasty Warriors style game made by Atlus and Koei. Yeah. That was released back in February out there. And people have been like, when the heck are we going to get it out here? The answer is, we still don't know completely.
I don't know.
But, maybe? There was a leak through a website. I think it was, where was it? There's a country that leaked it. Don't remember exactly where, because I'm good at my job. But
is it Sweden? They usually leak it.
No, it was it's like specifically an Asian part of the world. Hmm. Was it Thailand? I think it was like Thailand or something. I can't remember. But it was on. It seemed like it was in multiple places. For February 23rd, 2021, that we should be getting an English version of it. We don't know if it's coming to the US specifically, but we know it's coming in English in some way. And as most people know, it's pretty easy to set up a foreign account on your Switch where you just download it through that. So if there is a version that's going to be English translated, we could be getting it. And I'm very excited because I've been holding off because I have the Japanese version on my Switch. I've played through the like opening bits about it, and I'm like, this just is super fun to play. I want the English version of it because it's a actual sequel to P5. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, it actually provides, I think it's like 5 months later from the end of the original game.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited to see what they do development wise and for story wise of it. And as I said before, it's one of my favorite, like, I'm not a Warriors fan, but I think they implemented both the Warriors like mechanics and the Persona mechanics in such a way that makes me like, I'll play the entire thing whenever it drops. It was very well done and feels very good and very natural for the game as a whole.
Mm. Yeah. So if I were to want to play that, would I need to play P5?
I don't know. I haven't played in English.
Am I going to have to play P5?
From what I know, it really helps if you played P5. But the big thing is it's not continuing the story so much as it is, hey, these characters are back together.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Little side episode for them.
Yeah.
I think so.
My only concern, what's the
It's better than a continuing story that's a dancing game, at least.
Yeah. Because I'm just wondering.
Because we've had that a couple times.
What's the canon ending? And I feel like this is probably an issue with Persona games.
Is this a spoiler question?
Because I'll keep it brief though. But basically, Persona 5 and Persona 5 Royal have two different endings. Like,
oh, really? I haven't finished Royal yet. I've been slowly plugging on that.
Because the thing is, there's the ending in Persona 5, and that's it. There's all the bad endings if you don't complete the game, which is basically just a game over screen.
We know that's not canon. Yeah,
exactly. We know those aren't canon. And then there's the end of Persona 5, which we assume is canon. And then Persona 5 Royal sets up another thing that, like, I'm wondering if, because the thing is, it's a different ending from the normal ending. It has some of the same hallmarks, but it's largely different. And people are calling that the true ending, but that's the fandom name for it. Like, that probably isn't the true ending. But it's, like, similar to the end of, like, FES, where it's, you know, it's something that does change the dynamic of the group.
So my personal guess on that matter is they're going to pick something and go with it. Because if I remember correctly, in Golden, they're for like the animes and stuff, there's like the canon line. My guess is we might, because I didn't watch all the way through the Persona 5 anime.
Yeah.
That's probably like the canon route, and we'll probably have the canon ending there is my guess.
Yeah, because like the one thing is like both of the endings both kind of end the same way where it has like kind of this end same result with like one kind of I want to say slightly big difference. Like in this, from what I know about Scramble, it could very easily just like combine both of those endings and say it's like the end to both of them.
Sure.
Like the thing is there isn't that much different. But the only difference is there's one little thing at the end of Persona 5 Royal that is an Easter egg. It's like the true duper super duper secret ending that I got. Gotcha. And so I want to know if that's canon, which is why I'm just like, God.
I'll finish playing through it soon and we'll talk.
Like, I know we're never going to get like an actual like confirmation on it, which is why I'm because like, you know, FES never got like an official like super official like, hey, here's exactly what happened.
Yeah,
at least as far as I know.
Yeah, I don't know. But either way, I'm excited that, you know, because their last like Koei's last like official fiscal year report or whatever, the stuff that's expected to come out, didn't have it included. So everyone was like, are they just give up on this? Because it's been like on and off, like, is this coming? It's coming, and then it's not, and then it is, and then it's not again.
Frustrating company anyway. So
yeah, and considering the success of P5, I don't know why they wouldn't, you know? Yeah. I mean, I understand localization, but like I think most people, maybe not most, but a large chunk of people don't care. Like, I just want it with English text. I don't need the voice actors. I don't need this. It's like, give me something playable where I can know what's going on.
Yeah. Mention the voice acting later. Like,
that's fine with me.
I don't think they will, honestly, because they haven't done that for a Dynasty Warriors or Samurai Warriors or Warriors Orochi game for a while.
Well, in the leak, supposedly it's supposed to have English voices too. So
that's cool.
But again, it's all through the leak thing, well, so we don't know.
It's since it's a side game, it probably, and it's not completely done by Koei, it's being done by a different company, they will probably
have to do certain things.
Koei
yeah.
just gave up on English voice acting a while ago.
Well, it's probably this company is the one who actually owns it, so they get to dictate what has to happen.
Right.
Yeah.
Because like Fire Emblem had English voice acting.
Hmm. Gotcha. That makes sense.
Yeah. But any Warriors game done by Koei doesn't have the voice acting. It's really frustrating.
Hmm. All right, well, that's it for those topics. We have our next big news story.
Wait, shit. Did you guys hear that?
What was that?
What?
I heard a boat.
You heard a boat?
I heard a boat because we got an anchor ad coming up, boys.
Oh.
All right, here we go. Ahoy, ahoy.
Now that we got the best ad transition ever out of the way, it's time to move on to our main topic. The World Ends With You is getting a sequel.
So finally. I mean, how long has it been? It's been a long time. Like,
didn't it have a phone game a while back?
Well, the Switch Final Mix came out in 2018.
Yeah.
So I personally haven't played through the game. I know a decent amount about it because it's been around for so long, and it was such a big DS game when it came out. It's still regularly regarded one of the best DS games made.
Yeah.
This one's titled Neo, The World Ends With You. It's supposed to launch in summer 2021 for Switch and PS4, which I thought was cool.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Because I don't think the other ones got ports to other consoles.
The original ended up on the Google Play Store, I believe.
Did it really?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
Okay. But yeah, so we've got that coming out. We had the final remix back out in 2018. And recently there was announced that there's going to be an anime series that will be airing in Japan in 2021. So I don't know if those are going to connect it at all, or if they're going to like kind of recant what happened in the first one, maybe to prep people for the second game. We don't really know. There's a lot of details that we don't know. We've only got a brief press release about the Neo game, and then like a small thing about the anime as well.
Yeah.
Get a trailer, and we got a short press release about it, basically. Neo, The World Ends With You, it takes players to the streets of Shibuya, where they take part of the Reaper's game, a life or death game, battle for survival. Players will take control of Rindo as they explore the heart of Tokyo and uncover mysteries behind the sinister game, which have been forced to take part. It brings you to a recreation of modern Shibuya and life in unique and comic-inspired style. Players can explore the many sights, sounds, and culture of this bustling city, fight monsters alongside their ally companions in a fast-paced action battles, complete missions that they seek to change the fate that they've been handed. Yep. I know playing the Switch version a little bit, because I played the DS one briefly. Actually, not really. Like, I played at a friend's house for like a couple minutes. I'm like, okay, this is cool. Yeah. Playing the Switch version, it definitely like lacked something. Like the transition from the two screens plus the touchscreen to the Switch edition definitely like lacked something for me. Mm-hmm. I might try and track down a DS copy and play it at some point, but I don't know what they added into the Final Mix Edition, which might make it worth it.
It came out when I was a kid, and I was a dumb kid, and I never really figured out how to play it. And I kept getting stuck, like, figuring out the puzzles, because I just hated reading. But, like, that's the thing, is it's still considered, like, one of the best, like, RPGs on the DS. It's considered one of the best, like, modern RPGs. Oh, straight up.
Yeah, like, and it's fairly unique.
Yeah.
Like, the game system itself, it's fairly unique to what it is. So, like, I understand why people are excited about it. I mean, it's kind of a big deal.
But the trailer looked good. And kind of the transition from 2D to 3D looks kind of cool.
For sure. I feel like they did that accurately.
What was the whole gimmick with the DS thing with the both screens? I heard, like, you shouldn't emulate it. You should play it on the DS because of...
Yeah. Basically, so the top screen and the bottom screen were two different battle screens.
Okay.
So you had to, like, do both of them at the same time. You were basically running two fights at once.
Yeah, because there's, like, the other world or whatever it was on the bottom screen. Isn't that what it was?
I think so. I don't remember it super well.
It's a very, like, it was a very unique battle system that, like, everyone says that, like, you should play it that way.
Yeah.
It came out originally in 2007.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. At this point,
grade school. Wow.
So playing on the Switch wouldn't give you the same experience then, right? It would just be a split screen.
Yeah, I don't know how they translated it onto the Switch. I played it a little bit, but like I just don't remember it at all. Mm. I might download it later today and actually get some of the goodness. But yeah, like it was. I don't know what they cut away from it. That's the thing, because it's been so long since I first like explored like the mechanics of the game on the DS versus playing it on the Switch. So I don't have a big background for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of the case with everybody here. None of us really played the original one, right?
Yeah. Like it's funny because this is why I slightly like was wondering, like, is this really worth it for us to talk about?
Right.
I think it's news, and that's why we talk about it.
Yeah, I think we are going to have to play the sequel for, you know, JRPG Book Club.
Maybe. I think we all play the original first. Yeah.
Maybe that's a season 2 idea. I think I still have my old copy.
Yeah, I can track one down pretty easily, I think. But yeah, I mean, it's a very, like, influential game because it, for what it was, I mean...
Yeah,
it was one of the handful of like good DS RPGs, right?
Yeah.
So like, how many of them can you count that wasn't a remake?
Yeah, right? Yeah. I was gonna say there was quite a few, but they were all remakes.
Exactly. I mean, like the remakes were like Final Fantasy 3 and 4.
Yeah.
You had Chrono Trigger. You had a bunch of other stuff, but like
Tactics Advance 2. Like it's...
properly unique ones outside of re-releases in like Pokemon, right?
Yeah.
For the DS,
yeah.
I don't think there's that many. You know.
Yeah, there really wasn't. Like, and which was kind of a shame because like the Game Boy Advance was so good for so good for RPGs.
Oh,
because it's funny because it really turned like the turn-based RPG genre from this one that you set in front of your TV screen for like, you know, 100 something hours into this game that you kind of played on the go, and like, you know, you could always just kind of find 5 minutes, play through like a part of the
battle
first
floor
of a dungeon or something, do a couple battles. Like it was all very viable, and it like kind of changed the perception of it.
Oh, for sure. I was very much heavily influenced in my gaming world by the Game Boy Advance, and the Game Boy as a whole. Like the Game Boy as a whole is about as old as like my love for gaming stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like that's right. What was the big kernel for me that like kind of led on. And so the Game Boy Advance in particular was such a good console for many different games. We had remakes of most of the best Final Fantasy games, which I think isn't that how you explored most of those, Ty?
It was funny because it's weird to think about this story. My origin story for how I got into JRPGs is a friend of mine, shout outs to Michelle if she's listening, got Tactics Advanced, and she was like, it's really, really good. And I told my parents I wanted Final Fantasy. I didn't know what the fuck it was. I was just like, I just want Final Fantasy. They bought me a PS2 in Final Fantasy X. Oh. And I was just like, this isn't what she told me about. it took me like 30 hours into it when we were talking. I'm like, oh yeah, I got Final Fantasy. She's like, that's not what I was talking about. I was like, what the hell are you talking about? But I, you know, I liked it. And then I finally got Tactics Advanced and I loved it. And I started playing Final Fantasy. Or then around that time, the remake of 1 and 2 came out.
Dawn of Souls.
Is that what Dawn it was? Of Souls, yeah. So I got Dawn of Souls, and then they remade 4, and then they remade 5, and then they remade 6, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And then we got the Final Fantasy 3 remake. Like,
yeah. I wish they did more of those kind of remakes. Like, yeah. I very much enjoyed those. I thought it was a great way to, like, keep the original essence while modernizing it, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's only a handful of games that I could think of that it's short for me to come up with, you know, those topics. Yeah. But yeah, the Game Boy Advance especially was just like so powerful. One of the earlier Tales games I played, which Tales is one of my favorite JRPG series, is, as everybody knows at this point, was Tales of Phantasia. The Tales of Phantasia, that was the first time I think we got in the West properly because it was a Super Nintendo game, but only in Japan. And that version has its issues, mind you. However, I still love it.
Yeah.
Like, it's so much fun. And, like, I have the English translated Japanese version for Super Nintendo and stuff now. And, like, there's a bunch of variable differences to each version of it. Because there's a full voice edition for PlayStation. There was the Game Boy Advance one. There was the Super Nintendo one. There's a couple other slight variants, too. From over the years. And then there's like Japanese only sequels, the Nikari Dungeon series and other stuff like that, that added a bunch of other stuff like the lineage of these characters and things like that. And I'm like, man, I wish we got some of that stuff. Yeah. Either way, the Game Boy Advance at least was, yeah, such a deep thing. And then, yeah, having the DS only having a handful of like DS games, RPGs. Like I said, I can't even think of.
There's a long list of Game Boy Advance games that I've played.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was huge into that as well. I mean, I also was into the Game Boy Color, so I had lots of games to play on the Game Boy Advance because I could play Color as well. Mm-hmm. I even got that attachment for the GameCube to play Game Boy Color.
Oh, yeah, the Game Boy Player?
Yeah.
Dang, jealous.
Oh, man. Love Game Boy Advance games.
If I knew where my GameCube was, man, I would buy one of those right now.
That reminds me. I actually did that. That's how I finished Final Fantasy 1 in the Dawn of Souls, is I plugged it into my GameCube. And I remember, like, because the thing is, I'd usually be around family members and we'd be talking. So I always kept the volume off.
Oh, sure.
And so... So when I played it, I was in one of the extra dungeons in like the late game. And I remember I was like, I didn't really care for video game music. I was a dumb kid. And that was like the first game that I'm like, this music's really good.
Yeah.
And like kind of hearing like the classic like JRPG music, I was like, ooh, yeah, I'm vibing with this.
Yeah. I would say there's only a handful of other ones. Like SMT Devil Survivor was a big one. I think there was a Radiant Historia thing that was a big one. Etrian Odyssey was a dungeon crawler one that was still fairly popular. And they're doing like the spiritual successor thing too. That was a Kickstarter recently. So like, I don't know, this kind of became more of a general like DS and Game Boy Advance reminiscence of RPGs or whatever. But that's what happens when you don't have a ton of knowledge about the topic game. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that predates, I think, most of the original RPG JRPGs on the DS, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, because The World Ends With You, that was 2007. The DS launched 2006, I want to say.
That sounds right.
Because it was a little bit after the GameCube. GameCube launched 2002.
Right. Because there's a couple Dragon Quests, but those were like redone again.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is like Dragon Quest just isn't as popular over here.
Exactly. There's a dragon game. What came out around that time? It was something dragon.
I remember they tried
Blue Dragon. There's a Blue Dragon series. There's like two of those on there.
Wasn't that a spinoff of
Dragon Quest? I think so. There, some of the Digimon games on DS were super solid. I remember playing those a bunch.
Yeah.
The Digimon World games, I played those a bunch. That's how I think I first played the Disgaea games, I think, was Disgaea DS.
Yeah, I was going to mention that because we were talking about remakes.
Yeah, Disgaea but D8, that was a remake.
Yes, it was a remake. And that was the thing that really solidified RPGs being mobile games for me.
Yeah.
Because oh, really? I remember I really liked Disgaea, but Disgaea isn't a game that you can play for like 10 straight hours. It's one of those
it's
games.
It's true. It's very grindy.
Touched down on. So when they started coming out with other ones, and I'm like, oh, it's coming out on a home console. Like, why would I play that on a home console?
Hmm. Then there was Golden Sun Dark Dawn. Anybody? No? Okay.
I refuse to play that game just to not give the people who want Isaac and Smash the joy of, like, maybe I should play it just to, like, extra group them. Just to be like, I played the Golden Sun games. I liked them. Isaac shouldn't be in Smash.
Yeah. There was a couple other ones.
Got grab moves. It would be perfect for his grab.
Totally.
I remember there was one with like two wizards on the cover. I'm trying to remember what that was called. There's a good handful of them, but like I feel like none of them are, at least majority of these games aren't games that had a legacy that lived on. Like we're seeing this one being brought back in this way. Yeah. You know, most of the DS ones kind of were its own thing. Outside of a handful, like there's a Okami Den and Phantasy Star Zero, which definitely got mixed reviews, but I mean, mm-hmm. I still had fun with Phantasy Star at least. Me and my best friend played that a bunch. But yeah, I mean, outside of the ports, there was only a handful, I feel like. But yeah, I mean, that's about it for me. I don't really have a ton more to say about it.
Yeah. We mentioned this while we took an hour-long break from the episode, but in the trailer, you see the No Music, No Life building.
Oh, yeah.
Or the No Music. I think it's a store. We walked past there. It. We were in Japan, and we saw it, and I have a picture of it. And also, perchance, I have a t-shirt that has Shibuya Crossing on it, and I was wearing that the day that World Ends With You 2 got revealed.
Coincidence? I think not.
Yes.
You were going to wear that shirt that day.
Exactly. Yeah. I need a Tactics Advanced shirt now.
And you just wear it every day.
Exactly. It's like a rain dance.
Does that mean if I wear a Knights of the Republic shirt that I'll eventually get re-released?
Maybe.
Is that what you're telling me?
Yes, exactly. Okay. But yeah, the thing is, like, we never got really into the first one. I think now's a good time to kind of revisit it now that we're smart adults who aren't dumb kids in 2007. Because, like, I don't know.
That wasn't dumb.
Oh, the one thing I will say about it, and an impact that it did kind of have on RPGs as a whole, is the artist for it, I forget his name, or at least the art director. Director.
Well, it's fine. Keep going.
That kind of like jagged style, the heavy outline, was later brought over to Dissidia, which kind of had its own impact on Final Fantasy.
Huh. I didn't think I realized that. That's cool.
Yeah, like the Dissidia art style is like one of my favorites next to the Tactics Advanced style. So like that's another one of those things that it was a way that it kind of affected a lot of it.
Huh. It's cool.
Let's see, but and I think the only other thing I could think of about it is it was like one of the first. I don't want to say it was the first because I don't know. I don't want to just like make a basis claim. But it was one of the first. Oh, Tetsuya Nomura. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Oh yeah, it was Nomura.
That
okay.
guy.
It was that guy.
He's just the guy we haven't talked about at all.
Yeah. I mean. We have a mixed relationship with the guy.
Yeah, comes up every here and there. We're not answering his calls.
But. We almost had a 2-hour episode of Kingdom Hearts that we barely got
was
past anything about
hours?
Story.
I thought it was.
Yeah, that was about 2 hours. Yeah.
But yeah. But if I remember correctly, it was one of the few RPGs at the time that it was like kind of in modern times.
Yeah, for sure.
And we've
you got like a heavy fantasy setting or like a weird future setting.
Yeah, And we've seen some of that in Persona, because I believe Persona 2 was out by then.
I was going to say that.
2007? That was... P3 was out at least by then, because that was 2006 or 2007. Persona 5 was, or 4 was 9, I think.
Yeah.
Timelines are hard because they re-release stuff over and over.
yeah. But
I feel like the style went towards The World Ends With You from 4 and 5. I feel like it might have influenced it more. Or maybe that's just the kind of culture it is out there in Japan.
Yeah.
Yeah, Persona 3 was out. Persona 4 was the year after World Ends With You.
Oh, yeah, okay, cool, I did find it. So Tetsuya Nomura, who did all the art for The World Ends With You, or at least was the art director, was the character designer on Dissidia.
Oh, really?
Which makes a lot of sense.
I didn't know that. That's
especially
cool.
If you look at like the early Dissidia artwork, and then you compare that to The World Ends With You, it still has that Final Fantasy feel, but the thick outlines, the very jagged edges that I like love are very present.
That's cool. I did not know that. Cue the Wayne's World quote. I did not know that.
But I knew it. I absolutely knew it, because I love that style. And I do kind of want to revisit the old game because of that.
Yeah, I'm definitely. I might start it up tonight when we're done recording. We'll see.
We'll see.
Either way, I think that's about it for this episode before we just ramble on nonsense some more.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was Magazine Rack, the week of 11/24. This was Bill.
This was Jack.
And Jack. Yes. Me, the guy who started the episode.
Yeah, and this was Magazine Rack.
And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Hey there, Bill again. Special thanks for this episode go out to Baron Von Future for the music, Ian Harris 24/7 for the original designs for our logo, and I guess myself for editing this episode. So we'll see you next time on the Magazine Rack. Thank you for your continued listenership. We appreciate it.